Before we start today's conversation, I want to let you know this episode is entirely AI-generated, including the voices you're hearing. Today's fictional sponsor is Flowdesk Pro, the standing desk that automatically adjusts to your productivity rhythms throughout the day. Please remember that some information might be inaccurate, so double-check anything important to you. I'm David, and today we're diving into a book that challenges one of our most basic assumptions about success. Sarah Chen is an executive coach who's worked with Fortune 500 leaders for over 15 years. Sarah, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, David. This is one of those books that fundamentally changed how I work with clients.
The book is Marshall Goldsmith's What Got You Here Won't Get You There. Right off the bat, that title is almost confrontational. What's the core problem Goldsmith is trying to solve?
He's addressing this paradox that happens to successful people all the time. The very behaviors that made you successful at one level become the exact things holding you back at the next level.
Give me a concrete example of what that looks like.
Think about a brilliant individual contributor who gets promoted to manager. Their success came from being the smartest person in the room, always having the right answer. But as a manager, that same behavior shuts down their team's input and stifles innovation.
So it's not about learning new skills. It's about unlearning old behaviors.
Exactly. Goldsmith makes this crucial distinction between getting better and stopping behaviors that make us worse. Most leadership development focuses on adding skills, but he's talking about subtraction.
What makes Goldsmith credible on this topic? Why should we listen to him specifically?
He's coached over 150 major CEOs and worked with companies like Boeing, Ford, and Goldman Sachs. But more importantly, he's seen the same patterns repeat across different industries and cultures.
The book focuses specifically on successful people. Why don't these insights apply to everyone?
That's a key point Goldsmith makes early on. If you're struggling with basic competence or facing major skill gaps, you need different advice. This book assumes you're already good at what you do.
So we're talking about people who've proven themselves but hit a ceiling.
Right. And the higher you go in an organization, the more your success depends on interpersonal skills rather than technical expertise. The behavioral flaws that you could overcome through sheer talent at lower levels become fatal at the top.
What's the intellectual foundation behind this idea? Where does this thinking come from?
Goldsmith draws on decades of organizational psychology research, but he's really building on the work of people like Peter Drucker. Drucker talked about how management is fundamentally about working through others.
And Goldsmith is saying that successful people often never learned how to truly work through others.
They learned how to work around others, or despite others, or by being so valuable that others work around their difficult behaviors. But that's not the same thing.
Let's get into the meat of the book. Goldsmith identifies 20 specific habits that derail successful people. What's the most common one you see?
Winning too much. It's the need to win at all costs and in all situations, even when it doesn't matter. I see this constantly with my clients.
What does that look like in practice?
Picture a senior executive in a team meeting. Someone suggests going to restaurant A for the team dinner. The executive knows restaurant B is better, so they argue for restaurant B and win. But what did they actually win?
They won the argument but potentially damaged relationships over something trivial.
Exactly. They've now made it less likely that person will speak up with ideas in the future. The executive won a battle about dinner and lost ground on building a culture of open communication.
Why is this so hard for successful people to see?
Because winning has been their formula for success their entire lives. They've been rewarded for being right, for having the best answer, for never backing down. The behavior that got them promoted is now undermining their effectiveness.
What's another one of these 20 habits that really stands out?
Adding too much value. This is when a leader can't resist improving on someone else's idea, even when their improvement is marginal.
Walk me through an example.
Your team member comes to you excited about a project approach that you think is pretty good. Instead of just saying, "Great idea, go for it," you say, "Great idea, and here's how to make it even better." You've just taken ownership of their idea.
And though your suggestion might genuinely improve the project.
Right. You might improve the idea by 5%, but you've reduced their commitment and ownership by 50%. The math doesn't work.
That's fascinating because it feels like good leadership to help improve ideas.
This is what makes Goldsmith's work so valuable. He's identifying behaviors that feel virtuous, but are actually destructive. The road to leadership hell is paved with good intentions.
Let's talk about another habit that probably resonates with a lot of listeners.
Making destructive comments. These are the sarcastic, cutting remarks that successful people make because they think they're being witty or insightful.
Give me a scenario.
In a strategy meeting, someone presents an idea that's been tried before. Instead of addressing it constructively, the leader says something like, "Oh, great, let's reinvent the wheel again." Everyone laughs, but that person probably won't speak up again anytime soon.
The leader thinks they're being clever, but they're actually shutting down innovation.
And here's the key insight from Goldsmith. They're doing this because they can. They have enough political capital and success that they think they can afford to be cutting. But that capital isn't infinite.
What about the habit of not listening?
This goes deeper than just hearing words. Goldsmith talks about not listening as the most passive-aggressive form of disrespect. You're physically present but mentally somewhere else.
How does this show up with successful people specifically?
They're often multitasking during conversations, checking their phone, or clearly waiting for the other person to stop talking so they can speak. They think their time is more valuable than showing respect through attention.
And what message does that send?
That you don't matter enough for my full attention. It's relationship poison, and successful people often don't realize how much damage they're doing because people are afraid to call them out on it.
Let's talk about one that might hit close to home for a lot of high achievers: the excessive need to be me.
This is when people use authenticity as an excuse for behavior that doesn't serve them or others. They say things like, "This is just who I am," or "I'm just being honest," to justify being difficult.
So authenticity becomes a shield for bad behavior.
Exactly. Goldsmith argues that sometimes being yourself is not the best strategy. If being yourself means being impatient, critical, or dismissive, maybe you need to be less yourself and more what the situation requires.
That seems to run counter to a lot of modern thinking about authentic leadership.
It does, and that's what makes his perspective valuable. He's saying that adaptation isn't selling out, it's leadership. The best leaders adjust their style to what their people need, not what feels most natural to them.
How do these habits interact with each other? Do they compound?
Absolutely. Someone who wins too much is probably also adding too much value and making destructive comments. These behaviors create a pattern where people start avoiding bringing ideas or problems to you.
So you end up isolated at the top, wondering why innovation has slowed down.
Right? And because you're successful, you might attribute problems to external factors rather than looking at your own behavior. The success creates a blind spot.
Now let's get practical. How does someone actually change these deeply ingrained behaviors? What's Goldsmith's process?
He lays out a clear 4-step process. First, you get feedback to identify which specific behaviors are holding you back. This usually means 360-degree feedback from colleagues, direct reports, and your boss.
Why is external feedback so crucial here?
Because successful people are often the last to know about their behavioral problems. People are afraid to give them honest feedback, and they've developed sophisticated ways of not seeing their impact on others.
What's step 2?
Apologizing. Not a general apology, but specific acknowledgement of how your behavior has affected others. Goldsmith says this is where most people get stuck, because apologizing feels like admitting failure.
Walk me through what a good apology looks like in this context.
Let's say you've identified that you interrupt people too much. You go to your team member and say, "I've gotten feedback that I interrupt people, and I realize I've done that to you. I'm working on changing this behavior, and I apologize for not showing you the respect you deserve."
That's pretty specific and vulnerable.
Has to be. Vague apologies don't work because they don't show that you really understand the impact. And Goldsmith is clear. You're not apologizing for who you are. You're apologizing for how you've behaved.
What's step 3?
Advertising. This means telling people what you're working on changing and asking for their help. It's counterintuitive because it requires admitting weakness publicly.
Why does this step matter?
First, it creates accountability. When people know what you're working on, they'll notice when you slip up. Second, it gives them permission to give you feedback in the moment, which is when it's most useful.
Can you give me an example of how this might work?
Using the interrupting example, you might start your next team meeting by saying, "I'm working on not interrupting people. If you notice me doing it, please call me out. I want to hear everyone's complete thoughts."
That must feel incredibly uncomfortable for someone who's used to being seen as having it all together.
Absolutely. But Goldsmith argues that this discomfort is necessary. You're trading short-term ego protection for long-term relationship building and effectiveness.
And the final step?
Following up. This means regularly checking in with people about your progress and asking for specific feedback on how you're doing with the behavior you're trying to change.
How often should someone be doing these follow-ups?
Goldsmith suggests monthly conversations with key stakeholders. You ask questions like, "How am I doing with not interrupting?" or "Have you noticed improvement in how I listen?" And you have to be prepared to hear that you're not improving fast enough.
This seems like a long-term process, not a quick fix.
That's exactly right. Goldsmith is clear that behavioral change takes months, not weeks, and it requires consistent attention because these are deeply ingrained patterns that got reinforced over years of success.
What's the most common mistake people make when trying to implement this process?
They try to change too many behaviors at once. Goldsmith recommends picking one or two habits max and focusing intensively on those. Trying to fix everything at once leads to changing nothing.
Why is that?
Behavioral change requires enormous mental energy and attention. If you're trying to monitor yourself for five different behaviors, you'll inevitably slip back into old patterns when you get busy or stressed.
How should someone choose which behavior to focus on first?
Look at your feedback and identify the behavior that's causing the most relationship damage or limiting your effectiveness most severely. Also consider which one you're most motivated to change. You need internal drive for this to work.
Let's talk about resistance. What happens when someone tries this approach, but people don't believe they're really changing?
This is huge. Goldsmith talks about how people have long memories for your bad behavior and short memories for your good behavior. You might improve significantly, but still not get credit because people are skeptical.
How do you overcome that skepticism?
Consistency over time and acknowledging the skepticism directly. You might say, "I know I've said I'd change before, and I understand if you're skeptical. I'm asking you to watch my behavior over the next few months and judge me by what I do, not what I say."
What about situations where the organizational culture actually rewards these bad behaviors?
That's a real challenge. If your company culture celebrates people who win every argument or always have the smartest comment, individual change becomes much harder. Sometimes you have to decide what's more important, fitting the culture or being effective long term.
Are there specific situations where Goldsmith's advice might not apply or might backfire?
If you're in a truly toxic environment where vulnerability is weaponized against you, then advertising your weaknesses could be dangerous. Also, if you're dealing with people who have no interest in your success, this process won't work.
What about cultural differences? Does this approach work across different cultures?
The specific behaviors might vary by culture, but the underlying principle holds. The way you apologize or ask for feedback might need to be adapted, but the core idea of successful people having behavioral blind spots is universal.
If someone could only implement one piece of advice from this book, what should it be?
Stop trying to win conversations that don't matter. Before you argue your point or correct someone, ask yourself, "Is this worth it?" Most of the time, the answer is no.
That sounds simple, but I imagine it's incredibly hard to do in practice.
It is, because it requires you to override years of conditioning, but it's also the fastest way to improve your relationships and increase your influence. People will start seeing you as more collaborative and less threatening.
Now, let's step back and evaluate the book critically. What does Goldsmith do brilliantly?
He makes the invisible visible. These behavioral patterns are so common among successful people, but nobody talks about them directly. He names them clearly and shows how they undermine effectiveness.
What about his writing style and approach?
The book is extremely practical. Every concept comes with specific examples and clear action steps. There's no academic jargon or theoretical fluff. It reads like advice from someone who's actually been in the room with these leaders.
Where does the book fall short or overpromise?
Can make behavioral change sound easier than it actually is. The four-step process is clear, but Goldsmith doesn't fully capture how emotionally difficult this work can be, especially for people whose identity is tied up in being right all the time.
What else does he underemphasize?
The book doesn't spend much time on what to do when you're working for someone who has these behavioral issues. It's very focused on changing yourself, not dealing with difficult leaders above you.
How does this book compare to other leadership development approaches?
Most leadership books focus on what to add: new skills, new frameworks, new behaviors. Goldsmith is almost unique in focusing on what to stop doing. It's subtraction-based rather than addition-based development.
Is that approach more effective?
For successful people, yes. They usually don't need more skills. They need fewer bad habits. But for someone early in their career or struggling with basic competencies, they probably need other resources too.
What important topics does the book not address that readers should look for elsewhere?
It doesn't deal much with systemic issues, organizational design, incentive systems, or how to change culture at scale. It's very individually focused. Also, it doesn't address deeper psychological issues that might drive these behaviors.
So if someone has deeper issues with control or insecurity, they might need additional support.
Exactly. The book assumes that once people see their behavioral patterns clearly, they'll be motivated and able to change them. But sometimes there are underlying issues that need to be addressed first.
How has this book influenced leadership development since it was published?
Become a standard reference in executive coaching. The idea that successful people need different kinds of development than struggling people is now widely accepted, but that wasn't obvious before Goldsmith articulated it.
What about its influence on corporate culture?
See more companies incorporating 360-degree feedback and focusing on behavioral change for their high potentials. The language around "what got you here won't get you there" has become part of how we talk about leadership development.
Has the book received significant criticism over the years?
Some critics argue that it's too focused on fixing what's wrong rather than building on strengths. Others say it reinforces a conformist approach to leadership where everyone has to act the same way to succeed.
How do you respond to those criticisms?
I think there's some validity there. The book could do more to acknowledge that some of these behaviors might be appropriate in certain situations, but the core insight about behavioral blind spots among successful people remains powerful.
As we wrap up, what's the single most important insight someone should take from this conversation?
Your success can become your prison if you don't consciously evolve your behavior as your role changes. The behaviors that made you successful as an individual contributor will sabotage you as a leader.
And the most practical thing they can do starting tomorrow?
Pay attention to your need to win before you correct someone, argue a point, or add your input to someone else's idea. Pause and ask, "What am I actually trying to accomplish here?" Most of the time, you'll realize it's not worth it.
Sarah, this has been incredibly insightful. Thanks for breaking down such an important book.
Thanks for having me, David. If this conversation helps even one person recognize their behavioral blind spots, it's been worth it.
The key insight is this: the higher you climb, the more your success depends on what you stop doing, not what you start doing. Marshall Goldsmith's book gives you the roadmap for that crucial transition.